everybody. I'm convening this meeting of the Joint Interim Committee on Justice System Revenues. I apologize for starting a couple minutes late. I just ran from another meeting. It's nice to see you all here. Hello. We are scheduled for an informational meeting. We just have a series of presentations to this is in response to some of our discussion at our prior meeting. We want to make sure we have a good grounding on everything that's going to help us make decisions pretty quickly starting next winter. So our first item is a review and follow-up on several topics. Erin, will you please do this part of the agenda for
us? Yes, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. We quickly wanted to walk members through just the first part of our charter, and you will find it in your packet. Just to reiterate what our goal is before the February 2010 session, and our goal, just to quickly go through the four bullets here, is to develop an understanding of judicial department revenues and distribution and use of these revenues, and then determine the House Bill 2287 revenue available for distribution, and review the current budget status of state justice system entities, and recommend distribution of House Bill 2287 revenue during the 2010 special session. The agenda today will largely be a follow-up to questions from the first meeting related to these items, and then to hone in on some of these items as we move towards January and then our February decision.
Okay, so Mr. Borden, are you ready to do the first question for us?
Okay. Good evening. Before you, members of the committee, is a memorandum from myself and Robin Lamont entitled Status of State Justice System Entity Budgets. It gives a brief overview of the state justice system entities, a budget summary, and then there are some budget spreadsheets and charts behind the memorandum. The first question deals with who are the state justice system entities? And just for clarity, this is a term of art specific to House Bill 2287, something that you won't hear or necessarily need elsewhere in the building. It was coined specifically to give this committee maximum latitude when looking at the limited revenue coming out of 2287 and what agencies could potentially be affected. They span across the three branches of government. There are essentially 14 agencies in total. The first are in the judicial branch and the judicial branch program area, and it's the Judicial Department, Public Defense Services Commission, Commission on Judicial Fitness, and Council on Court Procedures. In the executive branch, there are nine agencies, including Department of Corrections, Criminal Justice Commission, District Attorneys and their deputies, Department of Justice, Military Department, the Oregon Youth Authority, Board of Parole and Post-Prison Supervision, State Police, and Department of Public Standards, Safety, and Training. Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. The last is in the legislative branch, and it's the Legislative Council, and this piece of it is very specific to not the Legislative Council's entire budget, but just that portion that is passed through to fund the Council on Court Procedures and the Oregon Law Commission. So those 14 entities combined comprise the state justice system entities. You'll hear a lot of talk about public safety system or judicial branch. It's those combined plus the Legislative Council. As far as the budget summary of these entities, there are three charts and then some summary information, and I'll just go over them at a high level. There is, on the first two bullets there, I've made an error, and it's the judicial branch, not the judicial department. But the judicial department and public safety program areas of the entire state budget comprise about $3.8 billion, or 6.8% of the total budget. The judicial branch and public safety program areas comprise $2.4 billion, or 18% of the state's general fund budget. And we're talking the current 2009-11 legislatively approved budget. The Department of Corrections, Judicial Department, Youth Authority, State Police, and Public Defense Services Commission comprise $2.3 billion, or 95% of the state justice system entity budgets. In referring to one of the specific questions that came out of the last meeting, few of the state justice system entities are funded fee-for-service. The most notable ones are Department of Justice, the Attorney General charges that are charged state agencies, and the Judicial Department's Revenue Management Program. There are some other minor exceptions, but these are the two major ones. In other words, the large portion of these entities' budgets are general funded. The judicial branch has had a 12.6% reduction from its essential budget level. That's the branch overall, and the public safety program area had a 14.3% reduction from its essential budget level. General fund reductions were partially mitigated by increases in other and federal funds. The judicial branch other funds increased by 32%, and public safety program areas other funds budget increased by 57%, and federal funds by 35%.
Questions? Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. John, I had a question about the Department of Corrections figure. I saw a huge increase in federal funds in 09-11. Was that part of the stimulus or something else? I'm looking at page attachment C.
Madam Co-Chairs and Representative Garrett, I'm going to have to get back to you on that. My assumption is that it is part of the federal American Reinvestment Recovery Act dollars, but I can get back to you with more specific information. That percentage increase was from the essential budget level was over 2,000%.
And sort of stands out on the page.
And my apologies, that's outside my program areas. I'm the Judicial Department's budget analyst, so I'll consult with the corrections analyst.
Other questions on this? Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Borden, the term state justice system entities, as you've used it here, is quite expansive in terms of how we've generally thought about the state's budgetary structure, in the sense that usually we deal with the judicial branch agencies and we deal with the public safety system. And in this definition, you've pretty well combined all of that under a heading of state justice system agencies. Has that been a typical grouping and definition?
Madam Co-Chairs and Mr. Bray, this is not a typical grouping. This was a grouping that came out of House Bill 2287 to allow this committee maximum flexibility when it looked at allocating the revenue that came out of, that was generated by 2287. Having said that, 2287 and its accompanying bill, House Bill 5054, provided only expenditure limitation to two specific agencies. So it was very narrowly defined during session to the Judicial Department, which will receive $6.5 million, and Public Defense Services, which will receive $3.5 million, the initial allocation of the revenue, the $39 million that was produced. So again, this was really coined as a term of art for this specific bill, and you likely are not to see it referenced anywhere outside of this committee.
Thank you, Mr. Borden.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Borden, on the Department of Justice, you have that as primarily a fee-for-service. However, in addition to the actual general fund that is supplied for the Department of Justice, a great amount of the fee-for-service is actually fees charged to other agencies in the state that, in fact, use general fund for that. So could you clarify that, one? And the second question is, could you explain to the panel how the DPSST is funded?
Madam Co-Chairs and Senator Whitsitt, you're absolutely right. The other funds with the Department of Justice come across all state agencies and can be a mix of fund types. Those, in other words, general fund and other funds that are then converted to other funds as they show up in the Department of Justice's budget. So they kind of, the color of money switches as the general fund is expended in the agency requiring the Attorney General services, and it's received as other funds in the Department of Justice's budget and expended as other funds for their legal services, legal staff. As far as your DPSST question, my apologies, but that is an agency outside my area of expertise, but I can get back to you with more specific answers on what comprises their funding source.
Follow up, please. Mr. Borden, if you could get back to me as well with a more specific answer on the Department of Justice, how much of their budget comes from general fund, either directly allocated to the Department of Justice or through general fund expenditures to pay the fees from other agencies. I'd appreciate that.
Be happy to. And if I may, Doug Wilson, the Department of Corrections budget analyst in our office, just passed me a note for the...
Ken.
Oh, I'm sorry. Ken Rocco. So in regards to the federal funds question for Department of Corrections, they received $103.8 million of American Recovery Reinvestment Act federal funds instead of general fund this last biennium.
Okay. Does that complete your portion?
Yes. There's, if I may, Madam Chair, there's one last graph just to show you judicial branch agency budgets by fund type. Okay. And it gives you some... It helps answer the question, what percentage is general fund, other funds, and federal funds? So this branch receives a nominal amount of federal funds. And it also gives you an idea of the proportionality of the Judicial Department and the Public Defense Services budgets. So,
thank you. Are there questions about that graph? Ms. Gates, are you ready?
We have another question to be answered. How is revenue collected and distributed?
And this isn't going to be a one-semester college course. It's just going to be a few minutes overview, right? It probably should be a semester.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Sarah Gates of the Oregon Judicial Department, Business and Fiscal Services Division. As the co-chair indicated, I've been asked to provide some further information to you about how our revenue is collected and then who receives that revenue and how it is used. And I'll ask Aaron if they've got the, there's a two-page handout that is, looks like it's double-sided, and one side says civil cases, major revenue sources, and the other says criminal cases. We're going to start with civil. What this chart or table outlines for you is the major source of the revenue on the left-hand side, and then it walks through who receives that money and how it's used. And I wanted to point out a few highlights and then answer any questions just about civil before we move on to criminal. When we met a month or so ago, we talked about the fact that civil is really a pay-as-you-go system, and it's driven by the filing fees. And as you see in the first line, the filing fees go directly to the general fund. They do not go to the judicial department. They go to the general fund where they're allocated out for general governmental operations. You'll notice beneath the word filing fees, I have put what the revenue estimate for the current biennia is for filing fees. It's approximately $32 million, and you'll see that throughout this handout. The next line points out the civil portion of the House Bill 2287 surcharges, and those go directly to the Justice System surcharge account for distribution, and that's what this committee is tasked with making a recommendation on. And as Mr. Borden just said, right now 65% of that goes to judicial and 35% of the first $10 million goes to the Public Defense Services. In the civil area, we also have a series of related fees that are statutorily directed, and you'll see those listed at the bottom part of this first page, and they go to the state bar, to the counties, to the general fund, and then on to the university system, to DHS, and then another one goes to the university system for a variety of purposes. And those are all set in statute. They are directed to go to these recipients and go for a variety of purposes. The state bar gets money for legal aid. The counties have two sources of revenue. They get county law library money as well as mediation programs. There's dispute resolution and the money for the Office of Children's Advocate and Domestic Violence Legal Education. So that's sort of all the major civil-related revenue sources. Are there any questions on this?
Yes, Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Gates, on the first line, you have the filing fees of about $32 million that go to the general fund. That's kind of challenging. If you have a fee that goes to the general fund, it's a tax, not a fee. We're not doing a fee for a service. We're collecting a fee or a tax, and providing it to the general fund for general operations. Are we not?
Madam Co-Chair, Senator Whitsitt, that money is going directly to the general fund. You are correct, and it is not based on a fee for the service that we would keep the money to provide the service. You're correct. Any other questions? Okay, I'd like to turn to the second page, which is the criminal case revenue, and it's a little more complicated than civil, but I think this chart will lay it out pretty cleanly as to who gets the money. I'm going to start at the left again and talk about the source and then who receives it and what they use it for. In the criminal case area, we have restitution and compensatory fines, and those go directly to the victims, and those are paid directly by the Judicial Department as we receive the money, and it's used for compensation for losses. Then there's the whole area of fines, which are shown in the next four series of lines, and that money goes to a wide variety of places. I'm not going to try and break out each one, but this chart shows there's pieces that go to the criminal fines and assessment account, which is used for statutorily designated entities, the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, DOJ, DHS, and the general fund receive that money. There's money that goes directly to the general fund from fines, and those are for Multnomah parking. There's money that goes to the counties and the cities for local ordinances. And there's also money that goes for the unitary assessment, then what's called the county assessment, and that's where your county jail gets funded from. It's also where we get the state court security account money, and the law enforcement medical liability account gets funded there as well. And finally, there is the $130 Dewey fee, which is split between DHS and the criminal fines and assessment account. The exact amount of these monies and how they end up on any given case really depends on the nature of the case and what happens during the course of the case. And finally, in the criminal arena, we do have the offense surcharge, which is part of House Bill 2287, and that money does go to the justice system surcharge account. There are a couple other pieces of revenue that flow through the Oregon Judicial Department that are footnoted on these charts, and those relate to the cost of collection, so when you need a payment plan or you're sent off to third-party collections, and also related to court-appointed counsel fees, and those go directly to Public Defense Services, and if it's in the end of the case, it goes to the general fund. So, any questions?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Do you know what percentage of the revenue is not collected from these criminal cases?
Madam Co-Chair, it depends on the type of the case. For violations, we do fairly well. We're in the 70 to 80% range of collecting what is imposed. When it comes to felony, we're at a much lower level. We're probably in the 20 to 30%. Overall, when you look at all of our outstanding receivables, we collect about 60 to 70% of what is imposed in a given year.
I'm going to follow up with a brief question for you. Some of that money, some people might describe as uncollectible. Mm-hmm. How does Oregon do compared to other states?
Madam Co-Chairs, I don't have comparisons in terms of what is uncollectible compared to other states. We are expanding our collections programs and adopting some of the best practices that other states, such as Colorado and Texas and California, are starting to use. So we are picking up on the best practices, but we don't measure our collection effectiveness quite the same way that other states do. So I can do some research and get you some more information that might make that a little more concrete, if that would be helpful.
Sure. Thank you.
Okay.
Questions? Yes.
Actually,
And then Senator Bonamici.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
In the last session that we had, there's a handout here that shows that the amounts collected by case class was $134 million, and of that, there was $81 million not collected in 2008. So you're looking probably at about a 60% collection.
Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Ms. Gates, I recall having a discussion in one of the Judiciary Committee hearings about a federal proposal that would permit the state to collect uncollected fees from tax return, federal tax refunds. Do you know the status of that?
Madam Co-Chair, Senator Bonamici, yes, I do. There are two pieces to that issue. One is the federal legislation that would enable states to intercept federal tax refunds for court debt. That bill has not been passed through Congress, and the National Center for State Courts is working with the delegations to get that passed. So we are awaiting passage of that piece of the legislation. In the last session, we did get the enabling legislation that allowed Oregon to participate if and when it is passed at the federal level.
Thank you.
Yes, Representative Benz.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I'm just curious, are all of these sources set by statute?
Madam Co-Chair, Representative Benz, yes, they are set by statute, except for the percentage that we charge for collections, which is an assessment that we set to fund our program. So, and restitution would not be set by statute. It's dependent on the case.
Yes. Thank you. Co-Chair, the restitution set by case, the $24 million then is just what? Is that, where does the $24 million come from under restitution?
Madam Co-Chair, Representative Benz, that would be dependent on what the district attorney presents as the amount of harm that's been done to the victim, and the judge would then set that this person owes $200,000 in restitution for whatever they were found guilty for. Mr. Bray might be able to provide you with some more concrete examples of that, if that would be helpful.
Follow-up?
Yes, thank you. No, actually, I understand the nature of how it's done. I just want to know where the $24 million came from under sources.
Oh, my apologies, Madam Co-Chair, Representative Benz. We collect that from the defendant, and we then, so if it's imposed in the case that the defendant is guilty, he owes Jane $100,000. The department will then go and collect the $100,000 from the criminal and send it on to Jane. Yes.
Well, yeah, I am sorry. We have a number, $24
million. Yes.
If it's set discretionarily, how can we predict the number?
I'm sorry for the confusion once again. We have based that on historical averages of how much we collect in restitution. We know typically what percentage of what is imposed we collect in a given time frame, and that averages around 10% of the criminal area in any given time period. So that's how we estimate it in a given year. That was approximately equal to what we've had the last two or three calendar years.
Thank you.
Mr. Bray.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I just wanted to elaborate a little bit on one of Ms. Gates's answers, and that was to the question, are all these set by statute? They are all permitted by statute, but in two instances in the civil side, the county board actually sets the amount of the fee, and that's for the county law libraries. They can set an amount up to 28% of the filing fee, and for county mediation programs, they can set any amount, and boards across the county boards across the state do that. And so in domestic relations fees, you will find that they vary quite a bit from county to county, because each county board sets its own amount for that.
Is it fair to say that in some ways the state of Oregon acts as a bank or banker as money is collected, then calculations are made, and then it's passed back to someplace.
Madam Co-Chairs, if by your question you mean, do we collect the money and then we know where it's supposed to go, and then we cut checks and send it out? Yes, that is correct. The Judicial Department distributes this money out to its intended recipients every month.
And in not every case, the state has control or authority over the amount that would be collected and that would be coming through the bank.
That is correct.
We're just doing transactions. Mm-hmm. Other questions? Yes, Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one. In reading through these convoluted fees and fines and so forth, it must be an accounting nightmare. I would wonder if you could, and I don't imagine you have this on the top of your head, but if you could give the panel some idea of what the administrative costs and actual dollars are for doing all that accounting. It seems obvious to me that this process was not put together with a great deal of forethought. It was kind of put together, happened, and I would wonder if that process were cleaned up a little bit, of how much administrative savings there could be in the judicial department or the judicial branch by statutorily cleaning this up and making it more clear to everybody, including those who are accounting.
Madam Co-Chair, Senator Whitsitt, I can give you an estimate of what it costs to run the revenue administration and collections function within the department. And I can give you some examples of how complicated it is, and that would indicate to me that we could streamline. We raise almost $17 million to fund approximately two-thirds of the cost of the revenue administration function in every given biennium. About two-thirds of it's paid for with the other funds. The rest is paid for out of the general funds. So we're talking $25 to $30 million a biennium for the staff associated with doing the cashiering, the accounting, the transfers, the adjustments, the collecting the money, calling the individuals, working with our private collection firms. It takes a lot of people time because our system is not very automated. Every time we do something to a case, it requires a person touching some piece of paper and something in the system. And then when the distribution side comes, each piece of money that comes in goes in so many different directions. It is an accounting nightmare, and it's very easy for things to go wrong. So I can't give you an exact estimate of what the savings would be, but knowing how complicated it was to implement 2287 alone, it took tens of staff several months of intense work to get the fee information alone set up in the accounting system and in the computer system and on the web and through education. That we could find some savings if this were a simpler system, but I just can't tell you what.
Ms. Gates, thank you for that response. Please be prepared to talk about it a little more. Our first responsibility for this winter is to make a recommendation on allocating a certain amount of money. The second part of our committee's work really looks at a broader picture, and I think we would like to probably revisit it when we get to that second part of our responsibility. Thank you. Other questions for this section? Is your testimony completed on that part? And then you have the revenue report that follows.
I do, okay. Madam Co-Chairs.
Let's do that.
It is complete on the first part. I've also been asked to do the ongoing report on how revenues are doing into the justice system surcharge account. For context, these fees started on July 1. There was a major increase on October 1, and your revenue report does not reflect that because the majority of fees on the report here did not start until the 1st of October. So to date, in the continuation of the current surcharges, at the top of the page, we've collected $170,000, and that's for the first 3 months. And that is just slightly below what we were projecting and not anything that I'm concerned about at this point. In the next 2 months, we will see the revenue from the remainder of the 2027 revenue starting to flow in. The civil case revenue will be the first to really show up, and then the criminal will start to move along behind it because there's a time delay between when you commit the crime and when we actually would have the case resolved and start collecting the funds. So next, the next report that you'll get in January, you will see a much better picture on this.
Questions about the revenue report? We'll look for the next one.
Thank you.
Okay. Is the committee ready to move to the next topic? Good. Mr. Rocco. Okay, Mr. Warner, can you start since you're already here? Thank you.
That was our plan. Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Paul Warner, Legislative Revenue Officer. I was asked to to update you on our overall revenue situation. Actually, I think the topic of your section here is on the 09-11 state budget, so I'll very briefly go through the revenue situation and what we know at this point on general fund lottery revenue. And then Ken Rocco will put that together and describe the budget situation and expenditures in relation to that revenue. What I've done is just put together a very brief outline for you. It's a little bit of an awkward situation for us at this time in terms of the revenue because we will be getting an update on Thursday from the state economist in the joint meeting of the House and Senate Revenue Committees. I can tell you, though, that the numbers you have before you are the September forecast numbers. We are, since that time, tracking very closely to revenue. So we do not anticipate major changes with the new forecast. That doesn't necessarily mean it's an improved revenue situation, just a stabilizing one. Let me just go through real quickly with you what those numbers are and then highlight the issues that we're tracking. What I've done is try to slice the general fund lottery revenue situation a number of ways to give you a sense of what those trends are. The first thing I would emphasize is that the general fund beginning balance has traditionally been relatively large, and you can see going into the 07-09 biennium, we had about $1.4 billion. Coming into this biennium, we had $11 million. So very little carried forward, and that, in fact, under our rainy day fund legislation from 07 is transferred to the rainy day fund. So that is not actually show up in our net revenue. If you look at our general fund revenue, you see that it bounces around a lot, but I will emphasize that in 07-09 there was over $1 billion in kicker refunds. So some of that volatility is not reflected in the economy, but rather the kicker refunds. The other thing is on lottery resources, you can see that now in 09-11 we're anticipating a drop of over 20%. And video sales have been down over 25% on a year-over-year basis. So we appear to be moving in a very different pattern in our lottery revenue currently and are questioning what that means for the longer term. In terms of our overall resources for general fund lottery, it's about $14.3 billion, which is about 1.2% above the 05-07 level and 1.7% below the 07-09 level. I've also put in a line there for the reserve fund transfers. Your legislature has moved a lot of money in and out of our two major reserve accounts over the last couple of biennia. If that number appears as a negative, that means that the money is going into the reserve fund. If it's a positive, money is coming out of the reserve funds. So you can see in 07-09, even though there was a transfer of over $390 million for the Education Stability Fund to help balance the budget, on net, there was a net contribution to reserve funds, primarily from a suspension of the corporate kicker of $319 million. And that was the reason why you have a negative. For 09-11, it's a $225 million transfer from the Rainy Day Fund, but about $187 million flowing into the Education Stability Fund as a result of the 18% constitutional lottery dedication. So if you net that out, That gives you a sense of the dollars that are available for budgetary purposes. You can see that they're up about 2.8% relative to 2005-2007 and down about 1% compared to the 2007-2009 biennium. Now, the issues, of course, that have come up, when I mentioned the kicker refund, and you can see that if there was not a kicker refund in 2007-2009, the revenue would have been over $1 billion greater than 2009-2011. So there's a sharp drop due to the economic conditions that the kicker is masking somewhat because we have an artificially low 2007-2009 number. If you adjust for that, we're down about 7.5%. And if you look at net lottery revenue, without or assuming that measures 66 and 67 fail on January 26th, $733 million comes out of that general fund revenue projection from September, and we would be down about 2.5% from 2005-2007 and down about 5.8% from 2007-2009. These are all just raw revenue dollars. One of the things to keep in mind about declines in general fund revenue on a biennial basis, we declined in 2001-2003 about 7.5%, even though the state, that includes the borrowing that the state did, appropriation credit bonds. But that was the first nominal decline in general fund revenue since the 1930s. So we've basically had two of those occurring within the same decade, again, and for the first time in the post-war period. So it's not something we're used to in terms of the general fund revenue stream. The personal income tax has been a very rapidly growing revenue producer historically. So this we appear to be in a period of greater volatility due to the economy, but also we think because of the structure of the income tax itself. Let me just mention a couple of issues in terms of what we're looking at, what we're monitoring. Obviously, the strength and durability of the economic recovery is critical. You saw the employment report that came out yesterday. The unemployment rate's down a bit, but we still have negatives in terms of the payroll employment numbers or job counts. That's what we track most closely. And until that turns positive, we don't really think that we're going to see any kind of a recovery of any strength. Technically, we think the recession is over. It ended in July based on a national gross domestic product numbers, but we don't see that translating into significant strength for another year or so, and we expect job growth to not turn positive until the second quarter of 2010. Measures 66 and 67, I mentioned those are a major uncertainty in terms of the outlook. Those, of course, we'll know in, coming into the February session. Some other issues that we are tracking very closely is the unanticipated growth of the business energy tax credit that was expanded in 07. The legislature spent a lot of time, the revenue committees did, trying to find ways to modify that. Right now, our estimates are that the credit will cost general fund revenue about $167 million in the 2009-2011 biennium. We are working with Department of Energy to update that as well because we've consistently seen stronger demand for those credits and certified projects than we've anticipated. Federal tax actions are always an uncertainty. We have a number of sunsets that are due in federal tax law that could have implications for us. And the other issue we look at or concerned about short term, I mentioned lottery is down 20%. We have a number of things going on. We have the restrictions on public smoking, we think, had some influence. And we just have an overall decline in the economy that's particularly reflected in declines in consumer spending. And since we don't have a general consumption tax, we don't have any outright comparisons, but we think certainly a part of that is due to just a structural change in consumer spending. And that's got us questioning what our long-term outlook is for lottery. And that's something we're watching very closely. Let me just conclude with the longer-term issues. The long-term growth of the U.S. economy is being evaluated. A lot of economists, of course, none of us really predicted what would happen a couple of years ago, and so there's a lot of reevaluation going on. And what is that long-term growth rate? It's important to keep in mind that Oregon's economy is very much dependent on what happens to the U.S. Oregon has never gone in a recession when the U.S. didn't, and we've never, every time the U.S. has gone into recession, we have. So well, we're very intricately tied there. We do think the stability of the state economy will continue to create an unstable revenue stream for us because of our industry mix. And we think that the volatility of our state revenue system with its dependence on the personal income tax will make us, our general fund, and particularly highly volatile. And with the increasing severity of business cycles, we think that we're going to be in a world of more instability in our revenue stream as we look out over the next decade.
Thank you. Mr. Rocco, do you have some information to add?
Probably more than you want.
And then I'll take a few questions after we've heard from.
Ken Rocco with the Legislative Fiscal Office. I was asked to address a couple things, how the 09-11 budget was adopted, you know, what pieces were put into that budget, what can be expected during the February 2010 special session based on some of the things Paul's just mentioned, and then the outlook for the 2011-13 budget. What you're getting is just a brief slide presentation of some of the major budget actions that occurred in the 09 session. And really, to talk about the 09-11 budget, you have to go back and look at the 07-09 budget, because during that session, we had to rebalance that budget twice, which took a lot of time from the legislature's limited time that they had. So the first 3 weeks of session, as you may recall, we passed an economic stimulus package. It was some deferred and capital construction projects. When the March forecast came out, we the 07-09 general fund lottery funds deficit was $862 million, and we only had 4 months left in the biennium to fix that. So the legislature developed a plan in February that took about the entire month of February, and it consisted of a number of things, about $311 million in budget cuts and fund shifts, $83 million in fund sweeps from other fund accounts that were put into the general fund. We used a slightly over $400 million in the federal stimulus money that was made available by Congress. We took the $53 million that was left in the emergency fund, had about $11.5 million in new general fund and in lottery savings, and then there were a small amount, a little over $2 million in savings from personal services actions that the governor implemented. So with those resources, the legislature initially rebalanced 07-09, and by doing that, you can see that some revenues were taken off the table that could have been used for 09-11. When the governor did his initial budget, the gap between the amount of revenue we had and what we needed to continue all current existing programs and services through the 09-11 biennium was about $1.4 billion. When the March forecast came out, that number had gone up to $3.1 billion. The Ways and Means co-chairs saw that trend and decided that they would take a conservative approach, because the real forecast that matters to the legislature in developing the next biennium's budget is the May forecast or the June forecast. So the legislature, the Ways and Means co-chairs, decided to develop a budget assuming a $4.4 billion deficit, not the $3.1 that was actually in place. So when the May forecast came out, it was determined that the deficit was $4.2 billion. So the course that they took was prudent given the economic conditions we were under. So that $4.2 billion deficit that came out in May included another hit on the 07-09 budget that we had to fix. So the components of it was another $532 million general fund decline for the budget we were trying to produce. It also included $351 million dollar decline for the budget that we just balanced again, so that had to be fixed. And then there was another $258 million shortfall in the Department of Human Services because of caseload increases and other costs that they had. So the final deal was that the legislature passed and, to deal with this $4.2 billion deficit included about $2 billion in budget reductions from agencies. That was an average of about 12.4% below what we call current service level or essential budget level. We used just under $1 billion of the remaining federal stimulus dollars from the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. We emptied out the Education Stability Fund of about $394 million, took the allowable two-thirds out of the Rainy Day Fund, which was a $225 million, and then passed two tax measures to increase taxes by about $760 million. So that was the plan that was used to develop the balance of 07-09 and 09-11 budgets.
Questions for Mr. Warner or Mr. Rocco?
Yes, Senator Berger.
Is there any possibility that the forecast that we're looking at on Thursday would be above $250 million lost that in on top of the $740 million or whatever it is that? That would mean if the ballot measures do not validate the legislature, is there a possibility that you'd be adding another $250 million to that?
Madam Co-Chair, you're asking, is there a possibility the forecast will be down $250 million?
Would be down $250 million.
I would say that based on the trends, it's very unlikely. But keep in mind, I'm saying the forecast on Thursday. I mean, that the 250 is not a big swing in terms of the overall size of the general fund. It's only about 2%. So very easy to see that kind of a swing between now and, say, for example, by the time you come into session in 2011. So there's still a lot of risk out there in terms of the national economy and the state economy. So a $250 million swing would not be unusual.
That question for Dr. Warner. On your handout here on the first two lines, beginning general fund beginning balance and general fund revenue, if you add those two lines for both all 3 years or all three biennium, it's 13.050, 13.266, and 13.213, which is pretty flat, actually. The discrepancy appears to be in the beginning balance in 07-09. What reflection did that have on the kicker?
Senator Whitson, technically the beginning balance and the kicker are not calculated together because it's the revenue in that current biennium compared to the forecast. Now, of course, there is a correlation. What happens is if you get unanticipated revenue and you don't spend it, you don't come into special session and appropriate it, then you're going to get a large ending balance. And that's the typical pattern is in the biennium preceding a biennium we have a kicker, you're going to have a large ending balance because we have unanticipated revenue. So basically, most of that $1.4 million was revenue that was unanticipated in the 07 close of session forecast.
And if I may follow, a good part of that then went to pay for the kicker, which was about $1.4 billion.
Yes, and then that shows up as revenue out of the 07-09 revenue stream.
Yes.
So that's where the balancing, it's not one dollar for dollar, but that's where the balancing works.
And a second question for Mr.
Real quick, I'm looking at the time. We had said we would adjourn at 6:15. We obviously won't be done by then. So I hope everyone can stay with us.
Mr. Rocco, what was the growth of all funds budget from 07-09 biennium to the 09-11 biennium?
The all funds budget grew approximately About 9%, I believe.
Does that number include the federal money
coming
in?
Yes, it does. That includes all other funds and federal funds.
Thank you.
Representative Benz.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Paul, the stability of the state economy you mentioned is less stable than it used to be. Is there a chart, a graph, or some evidence that you could provide with for us on Thursday that would reflect that increasing instability? I think you mentioned a couple of events in the last, the last 10 years. But is there some foundation for that that we could all have?
Representative Benz, I do have a line chart on percentage change in general fund revenue without these kind of adjustments we've looked at from 1929 to 2009. So, and I'll certainly bring that for the committee on Thursday and provide it for this committee as well. But it does show that we've dropped, we've had two biennium in a relatively short period of time that we've actually had declines. So, and again, as I said earlier, we haven't seen that since the 30s. General fund revenue has been volatile, but it's historically been in the neighborhood of 10 to 20% growth. And so we're over the last 10 years, we've had some strong periods, but that's been followed by these actual declines, which is not something we've experienced historically. But I'll be happy to supply that for the committee. It's just the raw numbers, but it gives you a sense of how unusual this time period has been compared to what we've historically seen.
And you will distribute that also to our group?
Yes, Madam Chair. I'll make
Thank
that available to this committee and the Revenue Committee.
Thank you. Other questions for this panel? Thank you both very much. We're moving on now to our discussion, and Mr. Borden is going to help us get through this section.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Before you is a second memorandum entitled House Bill 2287, Distribution Option Narrative and Matrix. And the purpose of this is to have the committee start thinking about it achieving its short-term goal of making a recommendation for the House Bill 2287 revenue distribution that will need to happen during the upcoming February special session. But again, this is just an informational item for the committee to consider. What will happen is when you have your January meeting, final decisions will need to be made so that we can build those into the Joint Ways and Means Omnibus Budget Bill, and then you'll have a final approval at your February 2010 meeting. This bill may also include a few of the technical adjustments to House Bill 2287 we discussed, and that is not part of this memorandum's discussion. But as Ken Rocco and Paul Warner discussed, there's a lot of uncertainty, and that uncertainty carries forward to this committee as well. So the uncertainty is with the current revenue situation, agency caseloads and workloads, the overall economic situation, by revenue earlier I meant the House Bill 2287 revenue. Will the $39 million that was budgeted or anticipated, will that materialize this biennium? There will also be an outstanding question of the January 26th special elections on the ballot measures. So to help assist the committee in weighing this uncertainty and reaching a conclusion, there are four possible options for the distribution of 2287 revenue. The first option is just a complete distribution. That is, we have $29 million left of revenue that could be allocated or distributed to public safety system entities and fully distribute that. The downside with that recommendation is that if the revenue doesn't materialize, then agencies will be caught short because they not only need expenditure limitation, but they need the actual cash in hand to support their operations. A prudent course of action under this option would be to be very conservative, even though they were given the expenditure limitation, to probably underspend their budgets until they knew that the revenue was actually coming in. Option B is a partial distribution during the special session, with the rest held as a contingency holdback for our future distribution once some of these questions became, answers to these questions became more clear, what revenue was coming in, how were caseloads materializing. So in other words, there would be a partial distribution from this special session of, you know, for example, half of the revenue, and then when we, when the legislature came in early in the 2011 session, there would not be another distribution bill that would distribute the rest of it. The issue with this recommendation is that while it gives agencies a fixed amount to spend, the amount would be less than anticipated at the end of the legislative session, and agencies would need to reduce staffing and services. If future projections indicated that more revenue would be received, expenditure limitations could be increased by the emergency board or the 2011 legislature. The third option would be a phased distribution, and that is the 2010 special session would make an initial allocation, and then they would take what was anticipated to be the remaining revenue and have that transferred to the general fund, so that the emergency board would then have the legal authority to make general fund appropriations up to that amount. And so the emergency board would meet quarterly, right now tentatively quarterly after the special session. And so there would be a series of allocation decisions, again, first by the special session, and then subsequently by emergency boards with general fund appropriations to agencies. The issue with this recommendation is that it provides the legislature with greater management of the budget decisions, but would require multiple allocations by the emergency board and make budget management and staffing decisions by agencies very difficult, because agencies would not have any certainty about the funds available until they actually were allocated by the emergency board. The last option picks up on what the current $10 million piece of 2287 is, and that is that distributions would only occur as the actual cash revenue was received by the Department of Revenue. So it would essentially have to be on a prorate. Right now, House Bill 2287 has 65% to the Judicial Department and 35% to Public Defense Services. It would be a more complicated formula, and of course the problems with those formulas are that you can overfund or overfund certain agencies. And there's also the issue that the revenue just wouldn't be received. So in conclusion, depending upon the committee's recommendation, again, that will occur in January, so we can get this built into the omnibus budget bill that will flow through Ways and Means. The distribution of all the estimated revenue will provide agencies with an expenditure limitation that might not reflect revenue collections. So in other words, that we can budget all we want to, but the cash may not come in as anticipated this biennium to support agency activities. Agencies under this option would need to either underspend their limitation or risk reducing budgets and staff in the last few months of the 09-11 budget. The second point, distribution of a portion of the revenue would provide agencies with fewer resources than anticipated at the end of the current last session, and agencies would need to reduce staffing and services. The amount of the reduction would depend on the limitation that was established. And the third point, distribution of a portion of the revenue with the balance reserved to the emergency board or retained in the fund would enable the emergency board of the 2011 legislature to increase expenditure limitations or general fund allocations from the emergency board if revenue is received. So behind that is a matrix that essentially outlines these same options with a little more detailed information about the type of mechanism, the legal mechanism to effectuate the options.
Thank you. Mr. Borden and Ms. Lamont, thank you very much for helping to prepare us for how we can make some good decisions. I have two questions. It's either for you or perhaps Ms. Gates. Given the poor economy, the poor condition of the economy in Oregon,
In anticipating how much money, you explained, we could budget all we want, but the cash may not come in. Have we taken into consideration that we may eventually achieve the same rate of collection that we usually do, but it will just take longer, and things that might normally come in within 3 to 6 months might take 12 or 24 months, and some of this would be received well beyond when we thought it would be coming in. Has that been built into the revenue projection?
Madam Co-Chair, if I may, I'll take an initial discussion of this, and then Sarah can follow in. But the House Bill 2287 was, those revenue projections were very conservative along a lot of different fronts. In other words, we made sure we discounted the amounts of civil and criminal dollars flowing in to their appropriate levels. Their historic percentage collection rates. We also discounted caseloads, okay, so that in case the caseload projection that originally came through would not materialize. And also there was a third discount, I believe Ms. Gates can help me clarify, and that is in the amount of deferral and other issues that as the cases work their way through the system and judges defer or have other judicial discretion on the amount of revenue collected, that was taken into account. So we begin with a conservative base. Now, whether they will materialize in 09-11 or 11-13 is an important question.
But having started out from a very conservative estimate, it seems like we may have covered our bases. We may have accounted for what we need to. My second question is, have you considered something that would be a hybrid between B and C, because I'm looking at some attractive features of both of those. And before you answer that, I wanted to throw that out to prepare you for it. I know that Representative Garrett has a question, and others probably have comments and questions.
Thank you, John. On option A, I think I understand the concern you pointed out about allocating a budget amount that may not come to pass. Is that basically what we face in the Ways and Means environment in any case with every agency budget, or is there something different about the risk you're identifying here?
Could I take a shot at it? I think there's a little bit more risk involved here because of the complexity of the surcharges and fees that were established, and I think in January we probably need to talk about some of those issues, because not all of the surcharges and fees ended up being as collectible as we thought. I'm speaking fairly broadly here, and there are ways to work around some of the fees that were identified, and because we haven't seen what's happened yet, we have no way of knowing for sure exactly how all of these new fees and fines and surcharges and things are going to be collected.
And if I may add, you know, about 50% of the state's budget is other funded. So this is not a unique circumstance. The legislature grants other funds authority all the time, but if that revenue does not materialize, then agencies are in trouble. So other funded agencies are quite adept at managing to cash flow.
Other questions about these options that have been presented to us? We don't decide one today. This has we've been given information, so we have some time. It's good food for thought. We have time to think about it and consider it before we do have to take action. Do you have any comment on maybe doing a hybrid of B and C?
Madam Co-Chairs, there could be a lot of combinations of hybrids here, and really be, in my mind, is the balance between that, because okay. B would allow for any kind of initial determination on what that first allocation would be, and then holding back the amount for an allocation right at the beginning of the 2011 session.
So a key decision would be how much was the preliminary allocation, 50%, 90%? You know, what would be the right thing to make sure that we were trying to provide some funding to agencies to work with for the coming year or two?
And Madam Chair and members of the committee, you could look at it, too, that in January 2011, there's still 6 months of the biennium left, and you wouldn't want to make that decision until actually you got to that point. So those other fund expenditures by the agencies could be withheld as an example.
Thank you. That's helpful. Yes, Representative Bennis.
No, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I guess I'm new to this budget thing, and I'm just curious, do you let the agencies then take the risk of having over-budgeted and then hope that the E-Board will bail them out, or do you tell the agencies that if they guessed wrong or we guessed wrong, they just have to lay people off? What's the proper, I'm looking for another column here at the end of your chart that shows the impact upon the agency depending upon the option selected. And I'm just curious, what is the safety net?
Madam Co-Chairs and Representative Bentz, the safety valve is really agency management, because especially in these economic times, there can be no assurance that there's going to be funds available for a bailout. In other words, a general fund appropriation from the emergency or the legislature or an E-Board allocation of general fund. So again, agencies would be granted an expenditure limitation, for example, under A, but would have to manage that very carefully and be tracking actual revenues that came in so that they did not find themselves in a position where they had made more expenditures than cash revenue would allow. So does that sufficiently answer your question?
Oh, I'm sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. It does. But I guess I'm curious, from our standpoint, how are we going to know exactly what those consequences might be? I mean, it might be as simple as laying people off. It might be as simple as what? So those, I'm interested in knowing what the consequences of to the actual agency and the services they're to provide would be under A, B, C, and D.
And Madam Co-Chairs and Representative Bentz, when as we get into the January discussion of the dollar amounts for allocation, that will further bring out what those impacts will be, what allocation would be funding and what would not be funded.
Thank you.
Mr. Bray.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Mr. Borden, I just want to be clear in terms of reading these two memos that you've given us tonight together, that we're being asked to, A, determine which of the, what you have defined as the justice system entities might get some allocation, and then B, how that might be allocated. Is that correct?
Madam Co-Chairs, Mr. Bray, that's correct.
Other questions before we adjourn? Madam Co-Chair, do you have any other comments you'd like to leave with us?
No, I really don't. I think that this was very informational. Thank you very much to the staff and to Mr. Boardman for providing this. I think that the discussion will be very interesting. I'm glad we have some time to ponder about it and think about it. And I just, we won't meet again now until January. I think we are a little at a disadvantage, or at least I am, with not knowing exactly what the Thursday forecast is going to be, because I can see $250 million. And so in thinking of the way this might play, that makes a big difference. And I think getting the election, a special election, behind us, it will be some very big
issues here for this committee before we can really move forward with some serious discussion. But I certainly hope that everybody has a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday. We have lots to be thankful for, even in times of bad economy.
Thank you for your words. Thank you, everybody. We are adjourned.